Okay, we're starting again just from the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuftet Zayin Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Beit Shammai Omrim, Tinasei V'titol K'tubata, that she can get married. In addition to getting married, based on the fact that she said that her husband passed away, she can also collect on her K'tubah. Beit Hillel Omrim, Tinasei V'lo Titol K'tubata, she can get married because she has special dispensation from Chazal to testify in cases because of the problem of Aguna. But that only relates to her ability to marry. That doesn't relate to her ability to collect on her ketubah. Amar lohem Beit Shammai, hitarte erva chamura v'lo natir mamon akal. How could it be that when you're talking about erva, which involves a chiyuv karet, possible chiyuv mita bidei adam also, how could it be that you're matir al pi edechad, and then the money issues, you're going to say, we need to edim. You can't do that. It doesn't make so much sense. We know that the brothers here being the Yoshim, are not able to collect on their Yerusha based on her testimony, based on her Eidut here, that she says that her husband passed away. That's not enough to allow them access to the Yerusha. Now, Amru Lahem Beit Shammai, Halo Misefer Ketubah Nilmod. From the Ketubah itself, we could actually learn what the outcome should be. Shehukol Tevla, because the Lashon HaKetubah reads this way, Shimti Nasil Acher, Titli Mashakatuv Laichi, that if you get married to another party, you will take that which is belonging to you. Well, that means you collect on your Ketubah. What did she do here? She married another party. So she is, in carrying out what's written in the Ketubah, she should be entitled to the Ketubah in this case. V'chazru Beit Hillel orot k'divrei Beit Shammai. And Beit Hillel then relented on their position and said that they agree with Beit Shammai. It's the second Mishnah that we have, Beit Hillel agreeing with the position of Beit Shammai after a discourse between them. Tosafot over here deals with the issue of how literally do we take this idea that we're allowed to read into shtarim. If you take a shtar, or any document, and you read into the language, does that have halachic implications? This is a masehejot, right? This is a contract between two parties. Why should the contract dictate what the halacha is? Now, by ketubah, it might be different because the lashon ketubah is dictated by chazal. So therefore, it has a certain amount of tokef. How much tokef it has, that's what Tosafot deals with over here, that maybe Beit Shammai takes it much more literally than Beit Hillel. Because even though Beit Hillel agrees over here, that's only to a broader context or a broader point. But to go to an exactitude where we would darshan every word, because if it's written in the Torah, that we would not do over here. Now, in addition to that, you have to ask the question, things like Ketubat Benin Dichrin, right? Inside of the Ketubah is built in a special dispensation based on Chazal that favors the male children of a specific wife in the Ketubah, and they get extra Yerusha based on the dowry that she brought into the marriage. Does that get triggered over here? Because if you're going to darshan that she gets her Ketubah, how much further do you go? Do you also read into the language of Ketubah the fact that Ketubah Benin Dichrin exists? Does that also get triggered by the payment of the Ketubah? So all of those are questions surrounding how much or how far did Beit Hillel go into agreeing to Beit Shammai over here. That's number one. Number two is Tosfot suggests that possibly they agreed because of the Kal V'chomer and not because of the reading of the Lashon here. And Beit Hillel in the end does not read the Lashon HaKetubah literally, but does it out of the Kal V'chomer mentioned before. We also mentioned in the Gemara in Baba Metzia yesterday, where it regards to a Shavuoi, who we hear is mate, that we give the Krovim the right to descend into the land. And tell us what it wants to know. Why over here are we not letting that happen? And over there in the Gemara in Baba Metzia, we are allowing that to happen. So Tosfot differentiated in one of two ways. Either the nature of the Eidut, it's possible that the Eidut in Baba Metzia was two Eidim. So over there, there's no question. It has impact both by Erva and by Mamon. Over here, we're talking about an Eid Echad, or Nemanut, of an Eid, even Pasul. The other possibility differentiated is the nature of what they're allowed to do. In Baba Metzia, they're allowed to descend into the property in order to take the peyrot, and to eat that which is on the property. On the other hand, over here, they are not allowed to sell or to transact in the property, and that's what is being said here that you cannot do. So there's a difference in what we're allowing them to do. Over here, we're disallowing the sale or the transaction in the property. Over there, we are matir, the ability to descend and eat the peyrot and utilize the property in the meantime. And it would be true in both cases. Over there also, they would not be able to transact. And over here, they would be allowed to descend to eat of the peyrot. All right, so now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chisda, nityab ma, yivama nichnas nachala al piya. So Rav Chisda takes this a step further and extrapolates this din and says, If she says that my husband passed away, we said before, Meit Bali, Tinase, she can get married. Meit Bali, Titiabim, she's allowed to have Yibum. So now she performs Yibum. What is the din of Yibum? The din of Yibum is that the Nachala of that brother now passes over to the brother that is performing Yibum. So what Rav Chisda says is, well, based on what we're suggesting over here, that she's allowed to perform Yibum, and we're Doresh Tuba, we're also going to say the same thing with regards to the Nachala of the Yavam. Why? Haim darshu midrash ktuba, anu lo nidrash midrash Torah. He says, we treat the ktuba like, as if it's Torah misinai, and we're doresh every word in there to say that she's granted the right to the ktuba. Let us just be doresh the Torah itself, which says, yakum hashem achiv. And from there we learn out that yakum hashem achiv means that he gets the nachala of his brother. So if he performs yibum, he's entitled to the nachala of his brother. So there will be monetary impact by the fact that he performs yibum, even though we're only dealing with one aid. That one aid, through the marriage of this woman, triggers a number of items. The collection of her ktubah, number one. Number two is it also triggers the ability of the avam to take over the property of his brother. So because of that, it says, Yakum Hashem Achiv, Amar Rachmana, very calm. The Torah says that he has to be making Hashem Achiv, and he did that. So he did what the Torah requires of him. If that's the case, it should trigger the monetary consequences of that as well. Amar of Nachman, Bat the Beitin v'amra Beit Ba'ali hetiruni li'inasei. So if she comes to Beit Din and says, my husband passed away, please release me now so that I can get married. Matirin ota li'inasei. We release her and she can get married. And as a side effect of that is, notim la ktubata. We give her a ktuba as well, and that's what the Mishnah said, which is that the ability to get married triggers as a side effect, the fact that she collects on her ktubah, even though if she just came and testified about the ktubah, she would not be entitled to it. So that's the next piece of the Gemara. Tznuli ktubati. So now she says and comes into Beit Din, I want my ktubah. Aflina say ein matirinota. Then she loses on both directions here. She comes in and testifies about the ktubah. She has no rights vis-a-vis the ktubah. That's number one. Number two is she also forfeited her right in this sense to get the release to get married because she didn't ask for that. So her testimony here is null and void in both areas. She doesn't get the ktubah. She's also not released to go and marry. My taima, adata de ktubah atai. She is coming to get her ktubah. And vis-a-vis the ktubah, she has no nemanut. Because this is a special dispensation regarding her husband and getting married. It's not a dispensation to get her ktubah. Her ktubah can be paid out as a side effect. It cannot be paid out as the primary goal of her edut over here. So in that case, we say, no ktubah, no release to get married. So no yibailahu. What happens if she says, hitiruli ninase, utnuli ktubati, mahu? What's the din there? She gives you both pieces of information. I want to be released to get married, but I also want my ktubah. In the previous two cases, she only made one statement. She made a statement, I want to get married, release me, or I want my ktubah, please get me paid. In those cases, it's black and white. The case of being asked to be released, she gets it. In the case where she asks for ktubah, she does not get it. Over here, she says both items. So which one do we favor? Do we say she's after ktubah, or she's after getting married? So, kemin damra ktubata, adaita de ktubata atai. Because she mentions her ktubah, that's what she's coming for. So therefore, that's what we're going to focus in. Or dilma, komili da'ifla le'inish amar lehula be'idina. Or maybe when a person comes to court, they think they get their one day in court, they get their one opportunity to speak to Dayanim, so they're gonna say everything that's on their mind. Let me be released, let me get my ktubah. It's not that that's the primary focus of why she came to court, but she mentions it because when you come to Beit Din, that's what you do. Now, v'imtim solomar. Imtim solomar is a very loaded term because of the Rambam. The Rambam believes that whenever the Gemara says Imtim Tzolomar, the Gemara came to a conclusion. You can see the little hey here, which means that the Rambam paskin that way. The Rambam will always paskin like the Imtim Tzolomar because he says the Gemara now concluded that that is the case, and the question moves forward from here. Other Rishonim disagree with that, but you can see that will make a difference in the Girsa here because we're going to come to a conclusion of the Gemara Teiku. The question is, how far does the Teiku go back? Does it go back to these two cases or only to the subsequent case after the Imtim Tzolomar? And that's why there's some question as to the girsa over here. Imtim salomar, komile de'itle de'inish amarlu le'beidina. So according to Rambam, that means that we just concluded that in this previous case, she will be released and she will get her ktubah. According to others, that just means the Gemara is posing a new question over here. But then, what's the next? Tznuli ktubati, betiruni li'nasei. Mahu switches around the Lashon, and she gives primacy to the fact that she wants to collect her ketubah, but she also happens to mention that she wants to get married. Hochavada adaita the ketubah atai. Over here it's clear that her primary purpose here is to get the ketubah. She happens to mention the other fact that she also would be released to get married. She doesn't know what Beit Din is going to release her through. She doesn't know the mechanism by which Beit Din works, and therefore she's just throwing out everything. Maybe it's the ketubah. If I get the ketubah out of the way, then they'll let me get married. Whatever it is, so she just throws it all out there, and the order doesn't matter. Teiku, here we leave this as unresolved. So again, as I mentioned before, does the teiku only go back on this last question, which is where she mentions ketubah first, or does it go back on the previous question as well, where she mentioned marriage first? That will depend on how you view the Imtim Salomar in between, or whether you have the girsa of Imtim Salomar. It's clear that the Rambam did have it, and therefore believe that the first question was resolved. And that is when she mentions the Nisuin first, and then the ketubah, she definitely gets it. In the reverse, that is not the case. There we have a take will be left bisafek, and in case of safek, she will be stuck, basically, in those cases, because we're not going to be matir in the case of safek when you're dealing with erva, and if you can't be matir the erva, you're not going to be matir the ketubah in that case. All right, next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is something that we learned many times over in the Masechta, and also was mentioned earlier, which is, Jezakol ne'emanim l'hayida. Anybody who can come and testify, we say here that an Eid Echad is sufficient to say that her husband passed away. Anybody is kasher. That means even people who are normally pasul eidut over here are nemanim. Chutz. Here are the exceptions to this rule. The exceptions to this rule are chamuta, her mother-in-law. Bat chamuta, her sister-in-law. This is a sister-in-law who shares a common mother with her husband and the sister-in-law. Vitzarata, her co-wife. Ve'yivimta. Now, Yivimta is the wife of the brother who is the potential Yavam if her husband passes away. And then Ubat Bala is her stepdaughter. Stepdaughter is the daughter of her husband that was from another marriage. Those five individuals are not believed. Rashi explains it here. The Gemara will get into it as well a little bit. In all these five cases, we worry about ulterior motives because these people have a bone to pick with this woman, either because of the nature of their relationship currently or their potential relationship in the future. And therefore, we don't believe them because they really have a reason to mess her up. And that is, if they get her to marry, she will then have to divorce all parties here. And that will be to their benefit because they want her out of the picture. But then the Mishnah asks, based on what we know from early in the Masechta, Ma ben get le mita. What's the difference between a get and mita? By mita, these women are not believed. But if they show up with a get, they are believed. So if any of these five women who have a nogeya badovar, in a sense, that they have some vested interest in the outcome here, if they bring a get, they are believed. The Mishnah says, k'shatav mochiach, because by the case of get, their nemanut is not primary. The get is what does the work. We do need them to say, b'fanai nechtav, u'b'fanai nechtam. We'll see that when we get to the Gemarot further on in Seder Nashim. But nevertheless, that's only a sidebar to ensure that the get was written properly. But in the end, the get is upheld by its ktav and the edim that are found in the get. So they are just vehicles to get the get to us. They are just messengers. In that case, their agency will not ruin the get. On the other hand, here, where their testimony is primary to the release of the woman, over here we worry about them. Now, generally, we do not worry about edim mishakrim. We don't worry about edim lying. Could be here because they are kovim or nogea badavar, we will worry about it. Or it might be that the whole case here, and we've mentioned this before, does not function through the particulars of edut. The reason that the woman is related over here is not because you have an ed echad that comes and that's accepted as testimony. It has to do with either what we call birur milta. They are just clarifying for us facts. They're not giving testimony. Or there's a certain amount of nemanut. Nemanut is there's a believability here in them because of the circumstances we grant them believability, but not from the side of edut, not through real testimony. So that's why in this case we might be posel them, because the reason that we grant them this authority with these edim or these edim sulim is because they're coming to give us facts or because they are believed. In this case, these individuals, we have questions about their ability to see the facts straight or to give the information over to us in a proper manner. Now, what are the issues that each one of them has? Now, the Gemara is going to get it backwards because it's going to ask about additional questions. Rashi himself says, "V'taima dekulu mipnei son ot ota umit kavnot lekilkala." All of them hate her, and they have an intent in ruining her life. Why do they hate her? Chamuta sonata. The mother-in-law dislikes her. Shomer bivila zutochal kol yigiyav amalai. This woman is going to eat all of my hard work and all that I put into my son. Is she really worthy of my son? I put so much effort into him, and now she's coming and taking him away from me, and she's going to eat all the fruits of my labor. There's bad blood there without that, and therefore there is a certain amount of friction or tension between the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. V'chein bat chamuta, omeret. Same thing with bat chamuta. It's a sister-in-law where they share a common mother. Zo tirash kolomel avivimi. This woman who comes here is going to marry, is going to take my brother. Look how much my parents put into my brother. Is she really deserving of this guy? Is she really the right woman? She's taken him away. She's taken away all my parents did. Vani edche. In the meantime, I'm going to get left out in the cold. Now that she's walking off, she's going to inherit everything from him, and I'm left out with nothing. Vivimta. Vivimta is easy to understand over here because she is a potential co-wife in the future. Which is that if she's married to the brother who will perform Yibum over here, in the future, she might be her co-wife. So she has a vested interest in having her out, so she never becomes her co-wife. Obviously, Tsarata is very straightforward, which is her co-wife wants her out of the picture. And Bat Bala is a similar idea. Stepdaughter has friction with the stepmother versus the natural mother that she had before. And she says, oh, this woman came and stole my father away, and now he doesn't pay attention to me, or my mother's out of the picture. For whatever reason, all of these people have a vested interest in seeing this woman out of the picture because there is some natural friction here. We're assuming that they're lying. They have a vested interest in lying. So therefore, we don't know if we can believe them because they have this vested interest there. So therefore, we're not going to believe them because of that. So Ibailo bat chamia mahu. So over here, the Mishnah specifies bat chamuta, where they share a common mother. What about the fact that they share a common father? A sister-in-law through a common father rather than a sister-in-law through a common mother. What's the din there? Time of the bat chamuta, the reason by sister-in-law that comes from a common mother. I mean, a common mother shares between her husband and the sister-in-law share a common mother. Deika ema desanyula hinami sanyula. This is something that's hereditary. The mother hates her, that's the mother-in-law, and therefore the sister-in-law, the daughter of that mother, also hates her because of the same reasoning, meaning that's what Rashi explained to us before, that this woman is walking off with their treasured brother, their treasured son. But here, when it's through the father, you do not have that, because the father-in-law does not have that same tension in the relationship. That's why we halakha emasanyula. So over here, there's no mother that hates because her mother-in-law in the picture, because they only share a common father. The sister-in-law and her husband only share a common father. Odilma taimi de bat chamuta damra, kaucha le gersana de ima. That she is eating up the fruits or the food of my mother. Gersana is probably from the word grisin, but it means that all the goodies and all the work and all the inheritance is going from my mother to them. Hachanami kamra acha le gersana de bein nashai. She will say the same thing about her father's family, in that they are taking away everything from me. He's eating everything up. So in this case, will we say that Bat Chamia has the same din? And we're really looking into the psychology or the mentality of the sister-in-law. Is the reason behind the sister-in-law because it's hereditary? It comes from her mother, and she's mimicking the behavior of her mother just on a different plane. That's here. She's talking about her brother rather than the son. Over here, they don't share a common mother. They only share a common father. And therefore, we won't extrapolate to the same thing by Bat Chamia, or the Gemara says, oh, maybe. She would still say, with regards to the father and her new stepmother, maybe she has the same feelings over there, even though, again, she's not related by blood, but she'll say the same thing about her stepmother. She's coming in to take everything that belongs to us. Nafka Mina is, does Bat Chamia apply or not? Do we believe a Bat Chamia? Do we believe a sister-in-law that only shares a common father with her husband? Bat Chamuta, we definitely do not believe. The Mishnah says that. Do we extrapolate that to Bat Chamia? That will come to the reasoning behind this. We have to look at what the reasoning is behind it. And because of that, you will then determine. If it's hereditary here, there's nothing to inherit because they don't share a common mother. If it's a problem of mentality about she's eating up what doesn't belong to her, then that mentality applies in both these cases. Whether it's her mother or whether it's the common father, again, she's going to take what her husband would have inherited. So in those cases, we won't believe her. Right, so now the Gemara says, Tashma, Hakol ne'manim la'ida, chutz mi'chamesh nashim. Everybody's believed except for five women. V'mita, if you're right, shitabion, then there would be a sixth. Why does the Mishnah only mention five? If it's bat chamia as well, it should also have been mentioned. Dilma de bat chamuta, de amra, kachla de girtzano. The whole reasoning behind Bat Chamuta is she's going to eat all the work of my mother, everything that belongs to my mom. Lo shnat Bat Chamuta, lo shnat Bat Chamia. Makes no difference where her, psychologically, she believes that this sister-in-law is eating up what belongs to her. Whether she's taken away what came from her mother's house, or whether it's taken away what came from her father's house. So the reasoning's the same, and therefore the Mishnah just writes one as an example, but you would extrapolate to the others. Where it says, V'anan t'nan chutz misheva nashim. Don't we have, it probably should be a braita, because we don't have any Mishnah like this, that we have except for seven women. So the Gemara's speculation here is that, why do we have seven? Because they're including this woman as well. We'll have to find the seventh as well, but at least we have six now. Where it says, Hayi Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanan. And again, you would have to say V'tanya. That's a braita, the Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Mosif Av Eshet Av V'akala. The Rabbi Yehuda includes the stepmother and the daughter-in-law. So this is very interesting, and we're going to explain this in a second, but these are reflexive, these are the other sides of the relationships mentioned in the Mishnah. Mother-in-law is mentioned in the Mishnah. The opposite side of mother-in-law is the daughter-in-law, that's the Kala. And then, as well as we saw in the Mishnah, stepdaughter. So the opposite side of stepdaughter is stepmother, that's Eshet Av. So in these cases, Rabbi Yehuda adds in the other sides of those relationships. Amrulo, Eshet Av, Harihi Bichlal Bat Habal. So that's what the Chachamim say back to him. Listen, we already mentioned that stepdaughter is not believed. By definition, if stepdaughter is not believed, the other side of that relationship is stepmother. The stepmother won't believe. Kala hari bichlal chamuta. And the same thing with regards to a daughter-in-law. Daughter-in-law is knocked out because the mother-in-law is knocked out. That's the relationship, the problem in the relationship. Rabbi Yehuda, bishlamo chamuta sanyala lekala. When it comes to a mother-in-law hates the daughter-in-law, the amrakach la the girsani. She's eating up my hard work, my labor, everything that I put into my son, she's eating it up. Elukala, my time asanya lechamuta. Why does the daughter-in-law hate the mother-in-law? I mean, there's nothing that the daughter-in-law should hate about the mother-in-law because she took away her son. That's not the case. Vishlama bat about the sanya leshadav. Again, a stepdaughter has a reason to dislike the stepmother. Damrakach la the girsani de aim. She's eating up everything that my mother created and all my father has, she's eating it up. Why does the stepmother dislike the stepdaughter? Okay, what are you going to say? He adds these two on. But you just explained to us why these two should be believed because they don't hate. They don't have that feeling. So why does Rabbi Yehuda add these individuals in if he's telling you that the Chachamim's extrapolation is incorrect? Because there is not a reflexive property here in the hatred. Elakala maitaima sanya lechamuta. Why does the daughter-in-law dislike her mother-in-law? Because she whispers to her son, she tells on her daughter-in-law. The mother-in-law is in the house with the women, and she knows what's going on with the daughter-in-law, and then she tells her son, do you know what your wife's doing? Do you know da-da-da-da? And therefore the daughter-in-law has hatred for a different reason. Not for the same reason that the mother-in-law has it. The mother-in-law dislikes her because she walked off with her son. The daughter-in-law doesn't like it because the mother-in-law is whispering to her son things that the daughter-in-law is doing. And the same thing with regards to the stepmother. She dislikes the stepdaughter because she also whispers to her father what the wife is doing and therefore she's giving up information or privacy that she doesn't want given up. And so in these cases, they hate for that reason. So now Rabbi Yehuda has a good claim against the Chachamim as to why there is no reflexive property over here. The Chachamim say something very important, a fundamental psychological concept, which is, Kimayim hapanim lepanim, kein leva adam leadam. Just like when one looks into the water, they see their reflection in the water, so too the heart of a person reflects the heart of the other person. People basically build relationships in a reflexive manner or a mirrored manner. If you feel love from a person, the person responds with love. You feel hatred from a person, dislike, you respond with dislike. So over here, even though maybe the kala, maybe the daughter-in-law has no reason to dislike her mother-in-law, but because she feels the friction and the hatred coming from her mother-in-law, by definition, her relationship with her mother-in-law will be a relationship that involves that friction even from her side. Because she knows that her mother-in-law dislikes her, so she will dislike her in return. There is this sort of symbiotic, reflexive properties to relationships by which if people love each other, that love will grow and draw them to closer. And if people hate each other, that hatred will grow because of the nature of one towards the other. And it will continue to bounce back and forth until it moves it to the point that this daughter-in-law or this stepmother dislikes the other party just because they dislike them. Your question is about here in the Mishnah, you only mentioned women. What about men that are related in these situations? So our Gemara doesn't ask this, but Yerushalmi does ask this question. And the Yerushalmi says that by men, we don't have this type of catfighting or type of revenge situations. These women have very close relationships. The women are found much more together, and they have this emotional relationship that makes them want to do things to get rid of the other party. Men are more rational about this, and therefore we're going to believe the men in these situations, even though they are krovim, even they are nogeya lebedavar. So because of that, the Gemara says that, like you were asking, whether it's a father-in-law, a brother-in-law, in all these cases, they would be believed in these situations, because we don't assume that they would have this type of planning to rid themselves of these individuals, and therefore they are ne'aman versus the women that are not ne'amanim in these cases. All right. Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, what does he do with that pasuk? The Chachamim have a good claim here that there is some sort of emotional connection between the parties. Ha'ibidivrei Toraktiv. That's written about Torah. By Torah, which is, Rashi brings two nice interpretations of that. Either, the more that you invest in the Torah, the more chance that the Torah will give you to remember it and to be a part and parcel of you. So here, this is a idea of yagato matzato, that if you work hard at it, the Torah will stay with you and be with you. That's one way. Or, lishon achina, imra bo mazvir lo panim hu machkim. So this is a very important thing. The teacher is an integral part of the relationship and of learning the Torah. If the teacher shows favor towards the student and goodwill towards the student will be able to learn and will pick up the Torah. If the student feels a certain amount of tension or dislike from the teacher, it's unlikely that they will learn the Torah. And therefore, the Hasbarat Panim over here has to do with the teacher-to-student relationship. And again, that both of these that Rashi says are true. Really nice, beautiful way to look at the meaning of this pasuk that Yehuda brings over here. So, Amar of Acha Baravyo, Boi B'Marovo. In Eretz Yisrael, they ask this question. Chamuta haba'a la'acha mikein mahu. The mother-in-law that is a future mother-in-law, what would be the din with regards to her? You could ask the same thing with regards to a kala, with a daughter-in-law who's a future daughter-in-law. You could ask the same question. Mi maska daita demit bal benafla kamei yavam. Does she have such foresight that maybe the husband will die and then she will be available to the yavam? And then by being available to the Avam, she now will become her daughter-in-law in that situation, Vesanyalo. So she preemptively hates her because of the possibility of becoming her mother-in-law. Although, or maybe not. So here, in this case, obviously, Yibum comes through a common father or shared father. So the brothers could be related through a common father, yet have different mothers. In that case, the mother-in-law of her first marriage is not the mother-in-law that will be her mother-in-law when she has the Yibum. The question is, that future mother-in-law with the Avam, does she already preemptively think about being a mother-in-law, and it's so difficult for her to swallow that she will then testify falsely to ruin this woman's life? Or she doesn't have that type of, we don't look two steps ahead. We don't look at derivative types of implications. That's what the Gemara wants to know. Tashma, Amra made Bali, v'achakach made Chami. So a woman comes back and says, she was overseas. She comes back and says, my husband passed away. And then after my husband passed away, my father-in-law passed away. So Tina say, Vititol Ktuba. She can marry and take her Ktuba because she's Ne'amenet, Legabe, her husband. V'chamuta Asura. But her mother-in-law remains Asura. Now let's think about this. In this case, once she says that her husband passed away, that woman is no longer her mother-in-law. So now, why wasn't she believed? As soon as she testified that her husband passed away, their relationship dissolves. If their relationship is now dissolved, why can't she believe? She should be an independent party with regards to Chamuta, with regards to her mother-in-law. So, my time, Chamuta Asura. So then why is the mother-in-law Asura here? La mishum damrinan lo bala mait, velo chamia mait. Her husband didn't pass away, and neither did her father-in-law pass away. Vahada kamra. Why did she do that then? Why is she lying here and saying that her husband passed away and her father-in-law passed away? What does she want to happen? She wants to mess up her mother-in-law and get her mother-in-law out of the picture. What's the best way to do that? Have her mother-in-law find out that her father-in-law passed away. Her father-in-law passed away, the mother-in-law goes and marries someone else, and then everybody shows up, and now her mother-in-law can't get married to her father-in-law anymore.
out of the picture.
But after some time, they come. They will end up in a difficult position. I want to ensure when they come back that I'm not in this bad position again. Gemara says, Dilma Shani Hotam, Deragish Latzaro. Here it might be different because she's already lived through the pain. She knows what it means to have a mother-in-law already because they already had a relationship that existed. Their pre-existing relationship is what already got her upset. So now when she comes back, she knows she wants to get rid of her mother-in-law and therefore she's willing to lie. In a situation where this woman has never experienced this girl as her daughter-in-law, maybe she would not preemptively do something to ruin her life. I mean that once you've already experienced the relationship, there you might have a vested interest in seeing the relationship not continue. So therefore, she says over here, if they come in the future, my husband comes back, my father-in-law comes back, I want to ensure when they come back that I'm not in this bad position again. That's what it means here. That batushata lotete titzdaron. So after some time, when they come back, I don't want her to be in the picture so I don't have to be in pain again. But that's because she experienced the pain and she doesn't want to be there in the future. So even though she's doing something for the future, which is that when they return from overseas, she doesn't want her to be her mother-in-law, but she already experienced her as her mother-in-law, and that's why she wants to get rid of her. Over here, the chamuta never experienced this woman as her daughter-in-law, so maybe she doesn't have the foresight to get rid of her. Tosafot asks the question, I think, Yechiel, that you raised over here, which is, this only works if she doesn't get married. If she gets married, then we shouldn't worry about it. So that's what Tosafot asks. Why don't we just watch? If she gets married, then based on the fact that she gets married, we should now allow the mother-in-law to get married, because now we know she didn't do it for a vested interest, because she would have hurt herself here as well as her mother-in-law, and she wouldn't have done that. So therefore, why don't we just wait for her to get married and let the mother-in-law get married? He says, we don't do that because maybe the reverse will happen. If we allow her to get married, and then the mother-in-law will end up getting married first sometimes, and that will be a problem, because that's exactly what she's trying to engender over here. Now, also, in addition to that, Tosfot says, right, over here, why doesn't she think about the fact that her husband might pass away? The difference between the case there and the case over here is that the kala, the daughter-in-law here, knows for sure that her husband's coming back and her father-in-law is coming back. How does she know for sure? Because she knows they're alive. She lied about the fact that they died. In the case of chamuta, she doesn't know for certain that the husband's going to die to know to mess her up in this case. She's lying without knowing the information. She's lying just to get her into trouble without having the information in hand. Over here, this woman has the information and knows for sure they're coming back. So that's also a difference over here because she knows for sure that she's going to mess her up by doing this. The other woman doesn't know for sure if she'll succeed at messing her up because she has no idea if the husband will come back. She might testify, the woman get married, and her husband will never show up again, and they might not mess her up at all. So in that situation, the kala over here has more vested interest in seeing this go through and ruining her life, versus the chamuta, who doesn't really know whether the husband will die. She doesn't know the information for sure, so she has a lot more speculation in what she's doing. That's the one thing that Tosfot says. And also, Tosfot says, Tosfot says something very interesting here, which is that even this kala is not sure that her husband's coming back. When people traveled overseas in those days, there was not certainty that they were coming back, even if she left them there alive. It's not certain that he's ever going to come back. And therefore, maybe her testimony is similar to the testimony of the chamuta. The Gemara is equating them, even though really the situation's different, because they have the same uncertainty about them coming back. Because even though she knows he's alive, she still is not certain he's coming back, and she's not certain that it will work to ruin the life of her mother-in-law. All right, next Mishnah. Eid Omer Meit V'Niseit. One aide comes along and says that her husband passed away and she got married based on that. U'ba'achad V'Amar Lo Meit. Then another aide shows up and says, he did not die. Harizulo Teitse. She is married and she may remain married in that state. Eid Omer Meit. If the one aide said Meit, U'shnaim Omrim Lo Meit. Now we have two aidim show up and say that he didn't die. Afo Pishi Niseit Teitse. Even if she's already gotten married, now she's got to get divorced. Shnaim Omrim Meit, the Eid Omer Lo Meit. You have two that say that he died, and one saying that she didn't die. Afal Pi Shelo Niseit Tinasei. Even if she has yet to get married, she may get married, because you have two against one over here. Now the simple reading of the Mishnah is that we're talking about Kasher Eidim over here. And in the face of Kasher Eidim, you have one aid. Cousin says that she got married, and she got married based on that. The other aid comes, he can't undo they basically become a stalemate, and in a stalemate, the status quo prevails. The status quo is she's married already. In a case where two Edim show up, two Edim trump one Ed, and therefore we're going to say she has to get divorced. In the case where two Edim say yes, and then one Ed comes and argues on them, one Ed has no power versus two Edim, and therefore she can get married even if she has yet to get married because she's relying on these two Edim. That would be the simplest reading of the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to undermine that because that's too simple. It's too easy. It's going to be tomorrow's daf, but since you asked the question, I'll at least address it, which is that this Mishnah is dealing probably with Zachar Zeh, which is that one Ed showed up, and then the other Ed showed up afterwards, and therefore she married in the interim. In the upcoming Mishnah, we're going to say they came Bevat Achat. The din will be different when they come Bevat Achat with Zachar Zeh. Bevat Achat, no one testimony will be accepted over the other testimony, and we're going to see in a second that has ramifications, and therefore there'll be a stalemate in that case. In the case where they come Zeh Chazeh, it might be that the Nemanut or the Edut of that one Eid has power more than the one that comes afterwards, and that has implications. And that you have to keep in mind, but that's going to be true in this Gemara as well. Taima, Dini Seit. The only reason we allow her to stay married is because she already got married. Ha lo Niseit, lo, Tina Sei. If she's not yet married based on the first Eid's testimony and the second Eid shows up, then we say, don't get married. That would be the implication of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, one aide came said, your husband passed away, so what did she do? She got married. Then the next aide comes along and says, he was not dead. So now she can stay married, the status quo. But what happens if the one aide comes, and before she had a chance to get married, the second aide shows up? So again, if there you have a status quo will remain in place, the status quo, she's not married, she should remain unmarried. And this is where the problem comes up. That wherever the Torah allows for one aide to be believed, they take on the power of two Edim. Now, this is only in special testimonies. This is in a case where an Ed Echad is believed, like in the case of Shvuah. Where an Ed Echad is believed in Shvuah, he doesn't get the power of two, he has the power of one, because the Torah says that an Ed Echad works. But in a case where the Torah generally does not allow an Ed Echad to work, and in this special case, they do allow it to work, that might be by the case of Sotah, where an Ed Echad is Ne'eman, as well as over here, where the Ed Echad is Ne'eman, even though he shouldn't be, the Chachamim elevated his power to the power of two Edim. If that's the case, then when the next Ed shows up, why does he have any power whatsoever? That means that when he came and testified in the first place that mate, he died, that Ed got the power of two Edim. He's got the power of two Edim. When one Ed shows up afterwards and says he's not dead, that it's two against one. Two against one, she should be able even to marry at this point. Forget about if she's married, she can stay married. She should be able to marry, period. So Gemara says, "Achi kamar." This is what it means. The Mishnah: Ed Echad Omer mate viti hurua lininasei. They granted her permission to marry. Uba Echad v'amar lo mate. Then the one Ed comes and says, "Lo teitzei mehetera rishon." We do not take away the original heter. That means that based on what we have here, once the first Ed testified, she's granted permission to marry. In being granted that permission to marry, it will not be rescinded. Even with the testimony of this new aide, it will remain in place and she will be able to marry. So it doesn't mean literally that she married, but that she was granted permission to marry. Obviously, the implications of that are, before they granted permission to marry, the other aide showed up, that would be enough to annul it. And it would say that we don't allow her that permission because then it would be a stalemate between one and one. It's only once they've accepted the edut of this aide and paskin aloch on him, do we grant them that right? And that means once she's granted the right, she has permission to marry, even if another aide shows up, even if there's an aide coming. Now, is that true that she's allowed to marry lechatchila? That is a machloket aposkim over here. There are those that suggest that she can get married lechatchila based on this. Tosafot, as well as many of the other Rishonim, based on the Yerushalmi, say that it's only bidiavad, that she's allowed to get married. If she does get married, once that first aide came, we're not going to force her to divorce. But the chatchila, she shouldn't get married because of a basic principle, which is this problem of what's called lasut sfatayim, which is that people are going to cast aspersions on her marriage. An aide showed up and said her husband's dead. Another aide showed up and said he's not dead. She goes ahead and gets married based on the testimony of the first aide that Beit Din gave her permission for, but a second aide said her husband's alive. And people are going to be questioning whether her marriage to this individual is really proper because they have some questions about it. And therefore, the chatchila, this woman should not get married, even though she's granted permission, bidiavad. And that's what Tosafot says over here. It's a large Tosafot that discusses the issue based on the Yerushalmi and other occurrences in Shas that discuss this issue of granting permission when you have an Ed Echad and then another Ed shows up. Now the Gemara moves on to the next piece of the Mishnah. Ed Omer, mate. We have one Ed that says mate, and then two come and say, that he's not dead. So two against one, it's trumped. Now, pshita. The Gemara says that pshita, the end of Rav Shalachai, b'makom shnayim. The testimony of one makes no difference in the face of two. Now, this is true in both instances. This is whether it's just one aid that came, and then you have two aid them afterwards, and they completely override the first aid. Or whether we already accepted the testimony of the first aid and we elevated him to two aidim. Even when we elevate him to two aidim, if real two aidim show up, they will trump him. They will override him. So in the question of the Mishnah, it's of course, if two aidim show up and say he's not dead, there's no question that they're going to be believed, and the testimony of the first aid is meaningless in this case. So why do you need to tell me that? Lutzricha, bipsule eidut, ukud rabbi nechemya. We're talking about not eidim that are ksherim over here, but we're talking about eidim that are psulim over here, and this is like the principle of Rabbi Nechemya. This takes us back to Peichet Amud Bet. The Gemara discussed this extensively on Peichet Amud Bet, and the Gemara is going to talk and say the exact same Gemara over again here in the Shita of Rabbi Nechemya. The Tanya, Rabbi Nechemya Omer, kol makom she min haTorah eid echad, haleich achar rov deot. Any place the Torah believed a single eid, then majority rules. What does that mean, majority rules? That means that we're no longer talking about eidut anymore. We're talking about nemanut, and we're talking about berur milta, or clarifying a fact. In those situations, how do we determine the decision point that we're no longer under the principles of eidut? Principles of eidut say certain people are kasher, certain people are not kasher. Certain people carry more weight than others. Over here, when you're already accepting psulim, you're clearly not working under the rubric of eidut. If you're working under this category, either of nemanut or berur milta, over there, they're not the classic rules of eidut. Here, how do we make a decision? Majority rules. Majority rules, no matter who the majority is. Therefore, asu shtei nashim b'ish echad, k'shtei anashim b'ish echad. That means that if two women come, they can trump one man. Or just like two men would trump one man. So over here, basically what you're saying in the Mishnah is that the chiddush in this case is, even if an eid echad came, who is a man, and testified that he had passed away, then two women show up and say that he didn't pass away, we're going to believe the two women. And we're going to say that she has to get divorced, or she may not get married in that case. The two women trump the one man, because majority rules over here. Despite the fact that the Eid Echad is a man who is a kosher leidut, and the women are psulot, and they're not kosher leidut. That's one way to explain Rabbi Nechemya. And that's not necessarily in conflict with Ula, because the case of Ula, you could just explain a case where it was Eid Echad showed up, and then Eid Echad came afterwards. That we agree, when it's one and one, then the first one gets extra power, and the second one doesn't matter. But where two show up in the second case, they will override the first one, and even Ula agrees with that. When you have two Eidim show up after there's one Eid, they overrule, even though the first one's granted the power of two. That's one way to explain the Mishnah. V'ibayitema. There's another way to look at it. Hey, chida'ata Eid Echad kasher mi'ikaro. When you have an Eid Echad kasher that comes in the first place, afilu mea nashim ke'ed Echad damyon. Then any psule Eidut that come afterwards, even 100 women, are considered like one Eid. They don't have the power to override him. He, as the Eid Echad that comes in the beginning, is granted the power of two Eidim, and he's granted the power to the point where he's no longer in this question mark. He is really like Eidut now, and anybody who's coming after him is working under a different category, and therefore they can't trump him, because he is an Eid that is granted the power of two Eidim, whereas everybody else is just granted the power of majority. Chair majority is not going to rule here, because he's considered like two Eidim. Ella, good going. So then, how do you explain our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is not a case where two came after one, it's overriding. So what's the case? The Ata Yishami Kara. A woman, a Psule Eidut, a Pasule Eidut came first and testified. So therefore, what happened was a woman came, and then afterwards either two men or two women came, and then they can override, because that woman is not granted the power of two Eidim. Vitirtsa the Rabbi Nechemya Hochi. And now you have to explain Rabbi Nechemya's statement that we rule by the majority in Psule Eidut. How are you going to explain that? That Rabbi Nechemya Omer, kol makom she'emin haTorah eid echad, haleich acharov deot, vasu. And this is the example. Shtei nashim b'isha achat. Two women versus one woman, k'shnei nashim b'isha echad. The equivalent of two men against one man. But that's only two women against one woman. Two women against one man, different rule. Now, the question about when is it a different rule, machloket rishonim over here. Which is it only true when the Eid Echad came first, when the Kosher Eid came in the first place? When he came first, we believe him like two Eidim, and therefore he trumps everything afterwards. But what happens if the first place an Isha shows up, and then the second Eid is an Eid Echad who's a man? What is the status of that Eid Echad, a man who comes as the second Eid? Is he just like the first Isha, and now you weigh it as Deot? Or is he still granted more power than the Isha because he's a Kosher Eid? machloket rishonim here as to whether that aid is granted that power. Rishonim, like the Ramban, and others say that it's only when the aid echad comes first is he granted that power. The Rambam seems to say that the aid echad is granted that additional power, even if he comes second, even if he is another part of the parcel, another part of the package, wherever he shows up, he's granted those additional powers versus psulei edut. That's number one question you have to ask. The second question you have to ask over here is, aval shtei nashim b'ishachad. If you have two women against one man, kapalga upalga dami. That's like 50-50. Right now, what does that mean? That's 50-50. Rashi over here says 50-50 means you have a stalemate now, which is that shtei nashim b'ishachad, they have the same weight. Since they have the same weight, therefore, the testimony is stuck, and the status quo will remain. Which means, lo teitzei me'heter harishon. If they already granted a heter because the first one who testified said, go ahead, then we're not going to change that anymore, and she'll remain there. The status quo remains. If she's not married yet, then the assumption would be that we would not grant her permission to marry because the status quo dictates over here. So that's why, shtei nashim ish echad kipalgo palgadami, which means that the ish echad is granted power like two, meaning that he equals the shtei nashim. That's one way to look at it. And that seems to be what Rashi is saying. That seems to be what's happening over here. We leave her b'hetera rishon because they basically stalemate over here. And therefore it remains as the status quo. Or the other way to look at it is that shtei nashim b'ishachad, the ishachad is granted superpowers. And therefore he overrides the shtei nashim. The Rambam learns pago pago here means we take her out of all marriages. We remove the hetera rishon. Pago pago here does not mean that the hetera remains. It means that this unwinds the heter. And therefore, the ish echad over here means that he has granted more powers than the shtei nashim, and he overrides the shtei nashim. The shtei nashim that originally said that he died, the ish echad that comes here now trumps that and says, no go, and the heter is unwound, and we will force her to divorce, in this case, according to the Rambam. Right now, again, this all relates back to the other concept, which is, when did they show up? This is only true when they come bezeh chazeh. But if they come bevat achat, over there the rules might be different, because then Beit Din is considering both of their pieces of information at the same time, and therefore you don't grant extra powers to any individual, because you don't make a decision until after you've heard everything that's there. When they come bezeh chazeh, Beit Din already gave a certain amount of nemanut to the first party. Now that's the same question you have to ask about, what happens when the isha comes first? When the woman comes first, and we believe her, is she granted superpowers, and she becomes like two women? And therefore, to undermine her testimony, you would need two women to undo it, or she is then just believed like Erechad, and then you would only need one woman to testify against that. That's also Machloket Rishonim. Again, the Ramban and many others believe that that woman is granted superpowers. When she's believed, and whoever's in that first slot that gains those powers is granted superpowers, and they are believed like two. If you're a woman, you believe like two women. If you're a man, you believe like two men. And that will have implications to whoever else shows up afterwards, based on those superpowers that are granted to you. Others believe that the superpowers are only granted to an aid kasher. They're not granted to an aid pasul, and therefore if an isha shows up first, she is not granted nemanut like two nashim, and if two women show up afterwards, she will be overridden. Right now, the last case in the Mishnah, shtayim omrim meit, maika mashmalan. What's the last case in the Mishnah teaching us that's a chiddush? That two people say that he's dead, and then one comes along and says that he is still alive. What's the big deal? Maika mashmalan. B'psulei edut, you can tell me it's about psulei edut k'rab Nechemya, da'asa bar rov deyo, we go after the majority, haynu ach. That's already the second case, the middle case in the Mishnah, we already learned that from. So ma'adu teyme kezlin about the rov deyo, the chumra. When do we do that? That's only when we go to chumra. Aval the kula, over here it's the kula. We're going over rov deyo, they're letting her get married based on psulei edut, rov edut, maybe lo, kamash malan, that we still allow it in this case. Achat omeret meit, v'achat omeret lo meit. One of them says that he died, and one of them says no died. Zushu merit tinasei. The one that said he died can get married, bititok tubata, and she will get her tuba. Zushu merit lomate. The one who said that he didn't die, lo tinasei, she cannot get married, velotitok tubata, and she will not get her tuba. The case here is obviously co-wives. Two women that are married to a single man. One of them comes back and said he passed away. She's granted, based on her testimony, the right to go ahead and now marry and get her ktubah. The other wife who says he didn't pass away, she can't do anything. Her friend's testimony doesn't help her, but she herself says that he didn't die. So therefore she remains, she made herself into a chaticha sura, and she remains in her current status. She may not marry, and she will not get her ktubah. So even though there's a stira between their two actions, we believe each one of them based on what they testified. Achat omeret meit, v'achat omeret neirag. One of them said that he died, and one of them said he was killed. Rabbi Meir Omer, Ho machshod zu adzu, hari elu on yasu. Rabbi Meir says, since they are disagreeing, they have a conflict here between what they are stating about the facts that they're stating, we can't let them get married, because one of them is definitely lying over here. He either died, or he was killed. One of them is not telling the truth over here, and therefore we have to worry about this edut, and they should not be able to get married, because you have edim machshim zedzeh. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Ho b'zu b'zu modot, Hashem kayam inasu. The common denominator between them is that he's dead. I mean, how he died, okay, that they argue about. But he's dead. If he's dead, they should be able to marry. Now this might go back to the chiluk that we said before, how you view this edut. If you view this as working under the normal rules of edut, then Rabbi Meir is right. Because here, when you're looking at these two individuals, even though they're telling you the fact that he's dead, the fact that their information is different, makes them into edim psulim, and therefore they should be disqualified. On the other hand, if you believe that the whole edut here is about bir milta or nemanut, is the question of, is this information true or not true? The answer is the information that he's dead is true. And that's all that we need to know over here. Despite the fact that their testimony is questionable because of the variances, nevertheless, the common denominator is dead, and that's the information that we are looking for. Eid Omer mate, Veid Omer lo mate. You have one aid saying that he died, one said no mate. Isha omeret mate, v'isha omeret lo mate, harizulo tinasei. She cannot get married. Now, this is different from our Mishnah, where it said that she could get married based on that. The difference being between zecher zeh versus bebat achat. In our Mishnah before, it was bezecher zeh, therefore, she was already given a hetera that elevated the first aid to two aidim. And then when the second aid shows up, he doesn't have the power to override him. Over here, where they show up together, no one has been granted that power because there's no psak halacha. There we have to look at them at the same time. When you look at the same time, it's an edut mucheshet, and therefore we can't do anything with their edut. It's basically a stalemate, and we cannot pass an halacha based on that. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Kuf Yud Chet Amud Aleph.